You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. In this episode, Reggie says that when we commit to the practice of meditation, we're committing to a profound journey of change and transformation. By letting go of our inauthentic self, we discover the unique inspiration, creativity, and love that is our essential nature. This talk was given in 2011 at a public teaching in Boulder, Colorado.
So, it's a beautiful morning, and we've gathered here. We are all in the midst of our lives as modern people. We have a lot of pain, which we don't talk about much. We have a lot of hope. We have a lot of tenderness in ourselves, in our state of being. We have a lot of defenses because that tenderness and that human-heartedness isn't necessarily welcome in some of the places that we circulate. We are interested in spirituality, and largely we live lives that are kind of separate from a focus on the spiritual path and on our development. You know, a lot of what we do in our lives, both by necessity and also because of our cultural environment, seem pretty disconnected. And yet, within us, we feel really called to something more. And there's a kind of deep longing in us for more connection with ourselves, with other people, with this beautiful world. We feel the suffering of other people, and you know, some of it is so unbearable that we can't really look at it. And yet we do feel it, and it's part of us, and yet we don't know what to do when we're confronted with it. It seems maybe a little bit routine, our lives, and maybe even coming to a weekend of practice feels a little bit routine, that we kind of do that as a sort of a compensation for everything else. And, you know, weekends do help us. And of course, we're only doing 4 hours today, but 4 hours could be an eternity, too. Or in 4 hours, we could touch eternity, and then it doesn't matter whether it's a moment or a year. But we're not sure, you know. We hear words like that, and it sounds a little questionable. It sounds very iffy. And, you know, because of the momentum of our modern life, while we enjoy spirituality, we enjoy sometimes practicing, we enjoy hearing teachings, there's another part of us that doesn't, maybe has a hard time taking all that seriously, because it doesn't really seem to have any fundamental impact on our actual daily life. There's a saying in many spiritual traditions, and particularly those from Asia, that our daily life is a dream, that it's a made-up thing, and that things really aren't that way. And that's a hard teaching to hear for a couple of reasons. For one reason, it is that there is a trend in Asian Buddhism which is doesn't really set well in the modern world, and I think rightly so, which is a kind of lack of, I would put it, a lack of acknowledging the possibilities of ordinary life and a kind of dismissal of the potential spiritual awakening that can occur in our relationships, in our families, in our jobs, and the idea that we should renounce the world and kind of walk away from it all. And there's something in us that says, no, that's not right. And the thing that's in us is a very, very deep and very ancient and very sacred thing. So we have that resistance. And then another reason, and that's a legitimate one, and then there's one that I think maybe isn't, which is that we, you know, the modern world and the view of the modern world is becoming so globalized. You know, we've been through a very interesting period in Western history. First, we had the sort of Western culture unfolding and really extremely culture-centric and really thinking, you know, the firm belief that Western culture has the final answers to everything. And then we entered the modern period and the encounter with other cultures. And, you know, it really, the whole situation really exploded in the 60s, as you know. And we've been through 50 years of encounters with other cultures. And, you know, we run into people from different places in the world, and a lot of us have traveled. And we feel, wow, you know, this is incredible. There's so much here that, you know, our culture has really lost sight of. But now we're entering a new period where those other cultures are actually in the process of being destroyed. And it's really questionable whether in another few decades any of those traditional ways of doing things are going to be intact. They may be in museums and they may be in the backwaters, but I know myself from my own travel that even within the remote outback of Tibet or some, you know, Himalayan, you know, village, or, you know, anywhere in China or anywhere else in the world, the young people don't want it anymore, and they don't trust their own culture, and they're not interested in what the elders have to say. Everything is about America, and everything is about the power, you know, that these, you know, many technologically powerless people, they look at the power and they think that's it. So one reason I think we distrust this idea that our daily life is a dream is because the ideology of the modern world is so powerful and is taking over everywhere, and pretty soon that's all going to be all there is. But, you know, those of you who practice know one of the most profound messages that comes out of meditation is the extent to which we are constantly making up our world and thinking things that turn out to be not true about other people, about our children, about our partners. We think all these things and they're so small. And we discover that it's not that way. And this is true of our whole world. You know, the way we approach our lives and what we think is important, we have a lot of ideas about what we have to do and who we have to be and how we have to fill our day. And the thing is, it's all made up. We feel often completely trapped in situations and we can't get out and we're hemmed in, we're suffocating, we're dying. And what we don't see is that's what we think. It's not how it is, ever. So, what would happen if what we think about our lives, about where spirituality fits in, the niche that it has, about what the world is, what other people are, what our own possibilities are, what would happen if we started to realize and start to find out that actually none of it's true. And that underneath this sort of dream, collective modern dream we've created, there's something actually real. There's a life waiting for us that maybe is quite different from the one that we have. What would happen? The spiritual journey is about that one thing. And I would distinguish spirituality from religion. And it's a matter of definition, okay? So I'm just using language in this way to make a point. Religion, and especially conventional religion, is largely a system, you know, that's set up, and it's based on very profound teachings, but it's a prescription for how to live life. We're told how to live life, and Buddhism is no different. Buddhism tells you how you should live your life. And many of the things that is said in the traditional religions are very good and very profound and very helpful. And it would really be great if people would pay attention about being kind to other people, about keeping our mind on a big picture, not getting caught up, about not being lured into using and abusing other people for our own needs. And then they have prescriptions, you know, they have codes of morality, and you know, you should go to church every Sunday, or you should, whatever you do, visit the synagogue or go to the temple. But it tells us how to live. It gives us a container. And it's a much bigger one than much of the world does give, usually. I mean, sometimes organized religion is really smaller, actually, than the world. But religion, in its best cases, is gives us a bigger container, a bigger house to live in. And it's very good and very useful. But that's not spirituality. Because that's not brave enough. There's not enough courage in that approach. Spirituality is about being willing to dismantle what we think about everything, step by step. It's a long process. We all have our stories that we need about our life, about our friends, our enemies, our traumas, our successes, who we are. Spirituality is about beginning to realize how much our stories, however far they've taken us, at a certain point, they are traps, they're prisons. Spirituality is about dismantling slowly, step by step, the stories. As we dismantle our ideas about things, our ideas about other people, it's not that they go away. You know, as humans, we're always going to have ideas about everything, but what we begin to see is the ideas are just another reactivity to actual life. In other words, the world that we think we live in, the spouse that we think we have, or the partner we think we have, is just a reactivity against the actual situation. Sometimes people think that Buddhism is about emptiness. Let's experience the emptiness. You know, let's realize that everything's really empty and there's nothing here. And I can't speak to other forms of Buddhism, but Vajrayana Buddhism, which was the lineage of Chogyam Trungpa when he was alive and continues, it's not about emptiness. It's about a world beyond our own ideas that is real, and beautiful and sacred and transformative. And the purpose of spirituality is not to get rid of our human life, but it's to take the covers off, take the lid off our human life. We may think that this radical spiritual longing in us to be completely who we are, to be, in a sense, unleashed in the world, to touch and feel and smell this world and all of its depth. We may think that it's a fantasy. It's not a fantasy. It's actually our agenda as humans. Those things are actually built into us, into our hearts, into our bodies, into our genes. We may think that that's true, but that there's no way we can make that journey, that we're different from other people. And truthfully, it's a lie. And that is one of the big lies of the modern world. Unfortunately, fed not only by Western people, but by Eastern people too. That somehow the modern situation is less spiritual than other ones. That somehow the way we live leaves less room for spirituality than in the past. That somehow, you know, we as modern people are more screwed up, more materialistic, and less spiritual than people in other times and places. That's the big lie. It's a big lie. Because it's not true at all. In fact, Chogyam Trungpa used to say that there's more possibility for people in the modern world to achieve what the Buddha was talking about than in his own country of Tibet. If you want to hear more, you can listen to the CDs of talks he gave in 1970, 1971, 1972. And interestingly enough, none of that information appears in any of the books. It was edited out. Isn't that interesting? And it wasn't edited out because there were bad editors, because people thought, you know, it doesn't really relate. So his message and the message of this lineage is all of the spiritual possibilities that we've been longing for and wanting are alive and ready and waiting. And there are only a couple things we need to do to activate that spiritual journey at its full depth. Because most of us are on a spiritual journey, no question about it. But if we want to activate that journey to its full depth and make the most of this life that we have here, there are a couple things we need to do. One of them, obviously, is meditation practice, and we're going to be doing that today and working with our bodies and our minds. And the other one is a sense of humor. Because we are going to find ourselves in some interesting spaces if we practice deeply. The range of our emotional life and the range of our sense perceptions and the range of the feeling toward other people is going to immensely increase. Now, it increases on the positive end. And, you know, we may feel a sense of openness that we've never experienced, or we may feel our bodies, it feels blissful, you know, for hours. We sit for a day and we go into the world and it's sort of like being overwhelmed by its beauty. We feel we never saw the world before. And we feel, this is good. I can live with this. But, you know, truth in advertising. There's the other side, which is that when the heart opens, the heart opens. And we may find ourselves in spaces that we've never experienced before of darkness or even unfamiliar spaces. I'll tell you a personal experience from last night. We were watching, Caroline and I and our son Damon were watching To Kill a Mockingbird. And for some reason, in the middle of the movie, something broke. And I felt like the pieces of myself were like eggshells, pieces of eggshell, or pieces of metal, or pieces of china. And I looked at myself, and there wasn't anything there except these fragments. And this was not a pleasant experience. I want to emphasize that. Somebody might say, oh, that's great. It was an experience of egolessness. Wow, that's really high. And I'm going to tell you the honest to God truth. I sat there and I thought to myself, man, you just lost it. And it really felt like the fragmentation of my personality. Now, if you read psychology, a fragmented personality is not a good place to be. That was thought number one. This is what it's like. Holy shit. It was just like empty space forever and pieces. This little neurotic reactivity over here and that little neurotic reactivity over there. And I'm reaching and I can't get them. You know, please let me be neurotic just for a minute. That was thought number one. And thought number two was, and I told Caroline this, I have no business being with these people. I am so fucked up. And you might say this is the reason that experience to me is so important is because it's a very difficult experience to handle, and yet it is part of being human. And it's part of the human journey that we go through all these things. And in the modern world, we have narrowed down the range of acceptable experience to almost nothing. And when we practice, so I said there are two things we need. One is opening to the meditation practice itself and doing it. And the second one is being, through the practice, you know, being clear that we're actually opening up our whole human life. Now, you know, when you have an experience like that, I mean, many of us think that. You know, we have experiences like, I'm really fucked up, I'm completely confused, you know, I'm no good, I'm out of control, I'm not smart enough, I'm too mental, I'm too physical. You know, we have all these different thoughts, and they come out of experiences like the one I just described. And what we learn through practice is everything is real in the sense that it's happening. And we need, and it's not even that, you know, it's not like I had a choice. The interesting thing about meditation is because of the practice, you open. But the thing is, we have to kind of be clear that's what we're doing here. We are not trying to once again manicure our experience and put it in some safe little arena. Spirituality is about dismantling the whole thing and then seeing what happens when we're not hanging on to what we think so tightly. What is going to happen? What is going to happen? What is reality like? If I don't go like this all the time with my ideas, what am I going to see? Trungpa Rinpoche used to say that this is not for everybody, obviously. This is not something that we necessarily all are called to. But it is for some people. And the person it's for is the person who has a kind of, we're very human and we're very tender, we're vulnerable, we're a lot of pain, but there's something that's more powerful than that, which is a hunger to find out what's going on beyond our own reactivity and defensiveness. So if we're willing to acknowledge that hunger, and we're willing to make this journey, then life becomes incredibly interesting. And I think, when we accommodate negative experiences or ones that are very painful, such as the one that, I was describing, strangely enough, we live through it because we don't think we're going to live through it. When I was in that state, I said to myself, the chances of me showing up tomorrow are zero. And I even spent a little time during the movie thinking about how I could get out of it. But we have the view. We understand as practitioners that that's the deal. And there's a little part of me going, I wonder where this is going. I mean, where can I go from here? And I said to Caroline after the movie, I think I'm going insane. I was insane. That's what insanity is. It's a mind state that you can't relate to because it's too much, too negative or too positive. I hope I'm not. Am I disturbing you by talking about this? And that kind of experience that, again, the meditation is what actually turns the key in the lock. It's the actual practice. And then there's not that much you can do about it. And that's why we meditate. We meditate because if there was something I could have done last night, I would have. I totally guarantee it. Give me a drug, get me a drink. But I was paralyzed. I couldn't even get up and get a drink. I was so horrified by what was going on in my mind. But meantime, another part of me is going, what's the big deal? People go insane all the time. And then I thought, well, what if I die? People die all the time. And then, you wake up the next morning and the sun is beautiful and it's a new day and you're in a different place. And that, that kind of flexibility and openness, again, that is not something we do, but it's a result of practice, really does free us big time. It frees us from fear, because we do experience our worst fears. There's a saying that Caroline gave me a birthday card, and on the front of the card was, I'm the best thing that ever happened to you. And on the inside was a saying from Mark Twain, was it? Who said, some of the worst things in my entire life never happened. Meaning, they happen up here. Once we see that, and once we open to the process of meditation, pretty much what we're really afraid of is a certain kind of experience and a certain kind of lack of control. And through meditation practice, we inhabit that world every day. It's like, wow, I'm not really in control, am I? That's interesting. I'm freaking out. I'm going insane. it's hugely liberating because the fundamental fear of what if doesn't exist, because all the what ifs are part of our experience, both the positive what ifs and the painful what ifs. And we begin to realize that the journey is not about hanging on. It's actually about letting go. It's not about hanging on for dear life, because the practice itself undermines that, and we see that actually life is really okay when we let go, and it's really okay to have a huge range. In fact, that's what we've always wanted. That is, in Buddhism, that's called the experience of Maitri, that sense of tremendous openness and accommodation of the person that we are and of our life. And we begin to have a kind of strangely impersonal view of ourselves, which is we see our human life and we see what we go through. And we start to really develop a sympathy toward ourselves. And it's not narcissism at all, but it's appreciating the vastness and the uncertainty and the openness, the possibilities and the pain of human life. That's Maitri. We start to be utterly non-judgmental toward ourselves. And then, of course, that expresses itself towards other people as well. And we begin to develop softness and tenderness and appreciation of their life also. This is not an easy thing, being human. In fact, it's incredibly difficult, whatever anybody says, because there are no answers. The journey itself is realizing that all the answers that we have been using aren't real ones, and that the journey itself is open-ended, that our hearts are open and vulnerable, and that's the journey. There's no place we can put down, you know, we can pound a stake into the ground and say, this is mine. We can't even do it with ourselves. So Maitri is developing this tremendous understanding and appreciation for our own life and the life of other people. We're all on a ship that's sinking. It's going down. And there's nothing to be done about it. It's our human situation. One of my very most beloved male friends, who I actually haven't seen for years, is dying right now. And, you know, he was in town for 3 months and didn't call me. You know, he has cancer. And now I found out from somebody else. And I've been to see him a couple of times. And it's pretty amazing, because number one is, as a practitioner, he's welcoming the whole thing. I mean, he's not sitting there saying with a smile on his face, obviously, but he is making room for the actual process of dying in himself. And we're sitting there and we're talking, and he's telling me, this is how I feel about the cancer, and here's where the cancer is, and this is how I'm feeling, and this is what I'm afraid of. And I'm curious about where this is going. And I feel my mind is opening, but at the same time I freeze up because I'm so afraid. And I thought, wow, that's like all of us. The man is taking his own death process the way we're all called to take our lives. There is no fixed point. It's open-ended, and we don't know where it's going. And he's relating to his death in the same way. And I feel like sitting with him, I'm in the presence of something incredibly sacred. I'm in the presence of somebody who's going through life's most profound initiation process. And I get to be in his presence. And there's no sense of feeling sorry for himself. There's no sense of blaming anybody, although this is happening because his doctor missed something obvious. No blame. He is owning his life. He's owning the process of dying. And I thought to myself, you know, what the hell, where the hell do I get off complaining about my life? I mean, really, think about it. This is ridiculous. We have problems with this, problems with that. This person is facing sort of the ultimate challenge, and he's right there. So it's been incredibly inspiring to me, and it's a very sacred process, and I see all over again why practitioners attend to the dying, because the dying are in a space that is the most sacred of all spaces. On the other hand, this is our life day by day, too. This is our life, too. It's not like we're in good shape and they're in bad shape. You know, we've got it together and they don't. It's not like that. They actually understand some things we don't, and we need to find out from them. The same thing happens with meditation practice, obviously. That's what we're talking about, that the more we practice, the more our minds open to the full range of what human life actually is. And then whether you're living for 100 years or whether you're on your deathbed, it's the same work that we're doing. So I'd like very much to practice with you, and I wanted to lay some groundwork because some of you, I haven't talked with some of you before. What I'd like to do is take about a 10-minute break, and then when you come back, we'll do some practice together. Okay, sound good?
Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Ketchog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.